So this shift in the concept of therapy suggests that when you're healthy and there's an intervention, this intervention acts as prevention. If you're diseased or ill, then this intervention acts as treatment. And of course, and that's basically the sort of scheme that I'm working at. And as I ask the question, why does this matter? Well, here's the reason why I think it matters. What are the obligations of prevention? And what are the obligations of treatment? And I suggest that the obligations of prevention suggest that the person is an empowered actor, that this is a choice, that this is an affirmative choice that a person can or cannot take, can decide to do, can decide not to do. Whereas the obligations of treatment means that the person is now diseased, has a disease, and is a victim in some sense. What are the differences between the obligations of being an actor and being a victim? And you probably know where I'm going with this. Does this availability imply choice? And so the choice to not utilize disease detecting and arresting technology is a decision not to act. And as I said, theragnostic then moves the patient from victim to an empowered decision maker. But the decision not to act actually suggests or could suggest that the person has either been negligent or culpable. And there we then begin to think in terms of, is this a basis for blame or stigma? For those of you who've looked at egalitarianism, sort of the brute luck sort of approach. So a lot of things, I think, come into play when you think about how do you want to respond to this kind of question. One, of course, is availability criteria. Is this the kind of technology that would need to be widely available in order to sort of think about it as, see, it has a mind of its own. Would this technology become generally available? Is that where we're going with this kind of technology? Or would it operate as the sort of genetic testing does in many countries, where there's certain kind of criteria that have to be met in order to make the technology available, that some sort of family history or predisposition of some sort qualifies you in order to get the technology? What does the decision not to use when it's available mean? Does it change according to the availability criteria? Does this victim sort of slash empowered actor change? Does this concept change? Do the responsibilities change depending on the availability of the technology? So clearly this is suggesting that there may be implications for personal responsibility if you are a victim versus if you are an actor. So what I wanted to do at this point was to sort of look at how this might actually feed back into the research and development process in terms of implications for research and translation and a feedback mechanism. So the three things that I've looked at, some of which of course have been looked at extensively in this field, is affordability, patent protection and licensing, and context of complexity. So in terms of affordability, obviously, the theragnostic technology, the cost will be significant. The cost will be significant to a determination of availability. Of course, if it's not affordable, widely affordable and accessible, we're looking at the possibility of exacerbating inequalities depending on how it becomes available, contributing to health disparities. And one sort of concept is that even on a smaller scale, it may have the very possible effect of distinguishing people on the basis of being vulnerable versus those who are not vulnerable to a particular kind of disease, if indeed people choose or don't have access to this kind of technology, recognizing that accessibility has consequences for responsibility. Patent and licensing and protection, of course, is one of the issues that's been looked at considerably in the area of synthetic biology. In this context, if the technology of theragnostics, which would involve synthetic biology, has a significant impact, would have a significant impact on healthcare. It would also have an impact on the sort of translational process if patents and licensings were to have the effect of limiting access or limiting the research progress. Of course, impacts on costs, impacts on access, as I said, and of course, ultimately, impact on responsibility. Now, the third issue, the complexity of the context, it's a little bit different, and I think it's actually one of the most critical ones and sort of pivotal to the sort of exploration that I'm looking at. One, I'm going to just briefly talk about the cascade model, which is not recognized, I would argue, by theragnostic technology. Also would raise the issue of multifactorial aspect of disease, meaning that there are many reasons, many factors that contribute to the onset of disease. The internal environments, and I think this issue was raised by one or two of the speakers earlier today, that in the question about who has who would have liability, well, there are all sorts of reasons why something may malfunction, why a vaccine or some other type of synthetic biology-enabled therapy intervention might malfunction. And it could have to do with the person's internal environment that is absolutely not anyone else's fault, not anyone's fault necessarily. And so it brings us back to questions of accessibility, but just how much responsibility. So I want to revisit this cascade model of disease, which is, and I should have put the picture first, so I'll go back. So the question then is, when we went from frank onset to through preclinical to presymptomatic to first to, it's really jumping ahead, is when does the cascade begin? When does the disease actually begin? So does it begin with that first drop? Does it begin with that biochemical marker? Does it begin earlier? Does it begin with the pre-drop, before the drop even starts to fall? If we look at the human aspect, this is really going on its own. Does the cascade obviously doesn't begin? Behave. So frank onset, when symptoms occur pre-symptomatically, pre-pathology, or at birth. I mean, there has been the observation, if you earlier intervention occurs, results in better outcomes, then why not say your disease begins at birth? Because there's this, you're gradually growing towards that end. So the cascade model of disease is premised on this sort of linear cause and effect model, that one step leads to another. It gains momentum further in the cascade. It becomes more difficult to stop. But it does justify those types of therapeutic strategies that are based on the premise that early intervention results in better outcomes, particularly in this linear fashion. So what are the prerequisites then, if we're going to look at a technology that's premised on this sort of cascade model? Well, it requires a clear understanding of the etiology of disease. We have to know exactly what causes. But if you look at a picture like this, and you may not be able to look for very long, I knew it. What?
Is it set on automatic slideshow?
I turned it off this morning, and So if you look at this and you try to say, well, what's the etiology of this, say, a disease of this cascade? Well, you know, which one? And so if we're looking at the sort of development of disease as being something more than this linear from point A to point B, but in fact a multi-faceted aspect, we're looking at something that looks probably a bit more like this if you do not necessarily subscribe to the cascade model of disease, which has been challenged in any number of routes. That interactions matter, that different kinds of triggers, environmental triggers, behavioral triggers, consumption patterns, all sorts of these things that may actually go into whether or not a person proceeds to frank onset. So, again, visually, you know, which one of these does the theragnostic technology attempt to get at? And if you go higher and higher and higher and higher and higher until you find it. But think about the certainty that's required in that kind of, utilizing that kind of technology. So in conclusion, I'm saying yes, synthetic biology as a key component in new approaches to healthcare. The possibility, the promise, I think, is enormous. But the success in doing so does hinge on utilizing an accurate model of disease etiology, emergence, and progression. That's, of course, extremely difficult. And does it have an impact on the concept of therapy or disease? I think that's very much an empirical question. Looking at such issues as, can it target with complete and utter accuracy the pinpoint moment at which disease actually begins, or significantly or substantially or accurately enough, early enough in the disease progression, that it actually has that impact of turning prevention into treatment or turning treatment into prevention. So yes, try to just to inject something in there. Okay, that's my talk.
Thank you very much for cutting your talk down to fit the time.